Measure Up Podcast, Episode 18, Weasley Goals Waste Your Time. G'day and welcome. I'm Stacey Barr, the performance measure specialist of StaceyBarr.com and your host for this Measure Up podcast. My passion is making it easy and fun for you to meaningfully measure the performance of your organizational business so it can be truly excellent at what it exists to do. In this episode of the Measure Up podcast about Weasley goals waste your time, our feature article is, Are Your Goals Measure Worthy? We'll help Measure Up subscriber Laura answer her question about how to measure services that are not necessarily quantitative, and we'll wrap up with a quick tip for using a mysterious thing called sensory-rich language. But I'm going to start out with a shout-out to Gavin, who emailed in response to my recent pleas to hear from whoever is listening to these podcasts and to get some feedback from you. Gavin wrote, Stacey, I love listening to your podcasts and you are not just talking into the ether, someone is listening. I used to read your newsletters but lost a bit of momentum with that. Now I download your podcast, grab the dog and the iPod and head out for a long walk. I've been known to listen to the same podcast several times and each time I get something new out of it. Well, thanks, Gavin, for letting me know that you're out there and that you're getting something out of the podcast. I'm really happy. Hope you're having a nice walk with your dog, by the way, as you're listening to this one. I take my iPod running, so with the various podcasts I listen to, I often will do it while I'm out, particularly on a long run. Well, weasel words are the inspiration for this episode of the podcast. And weasel words is a term that I first heard from Australian author Don Watson. Don Watson was a speechwriter for one of our past prime ministers, Paul Keating. I think he also wrote Paul Keating's biography. But of late, he's become more known for his passion for how we use or abuse the English language. I don't know if he coined that term weasel words. In fact, I'm pretty sure he didn't. There's a Wikipedia entry about weasel words that you could Google if you wanted to. I think one of the earliest references to the term was in association with something that Theodore Roosevelt said. But the idea of weasel words is that they are words that are empty shells, words that contain no meaning. I guess that's the parallel to the weasel part of it. Apparently, weasels will suck the contents out of an egg, and you wouldn't even tell. You know, it's just a tiny little hole and they suck the contents out and the egg still looks whole. And that's what weasel words are. They look like they're real words. They look like they're communicating something, but in fact they're not. I'll give you a few examples of the weasel words that I see a lot of. Effective, efficient, sustainable, reliable, quality, valuable, collaborative, functional, capable, integrated. I'm sure you could add your own words to that list. But they're words that mean a lot of different things to different people. They're words that don't pin down meaning. And when it comes to performance measurements, we really have to pin down meaning or we end up with what many people say they have, which are goals that are immeasurable. This language is endemic in our society. You know, it's not just in our strategic plans and business plans and goals and objectives. It's everywhere. It's in the way we speak to each other. And I don't think enough of us are brave enough to start asking questions about what people really mean when they use those weasel words. Now, that might be at work, but it might also be at home. It might be in social situations as well. If we really listen carefully to the words that people choose when they speak, it opens up a whole new option for how a conversation might go forward. If someone says something about value, I wonder where the conversation would go if you were to stop for a moment and ask them what value meant to them, or if they believed that a particular service or recent cool thing that they bought at the shop was really high quality. ask them what kind of qualities they're talking about. What did that thing have that meant high quality? I think we'd get closer to understanding what people's values were, the things that are really important to them, that they hold dear, that are at the very core of who they are and what decisions and choices and actions they take in the world. I think we'd understand people a little bit better if we could ask more questions about what's behind those words we choose. But at least in the space of business, in strategic plans and business plans, where goals and objectives are usually written with loads and loads of weasel words, there are some very real advantages to asking, what do those words really mean? We've got a goal here about efficiency. Well, what does efficiency really mean to us? It's going to make it a lot easier for us to find meaningful measures. It's going to make it a lot easier for us to meaningfully cascade our strategy. Or in other words, what I mean by cascade, another weasel word, is that it's going to be a lot easier for everybody else in the organization, at no matter what level they work at or in what department or functional area they work in, they would be able to work out what results were really important for them to focus on and to get better at if they're going to be in support of helping the company or the organization achieve its strategic direction or strategic priorities. And of course, when people understand what that strategic direction is, they understand what the goals really mean and can translate those goals to their own local area or to what's within their own circle of influence, it's much easier for them to get engaged in that strategy and to buy into it. Now, hopefully I can make it a bit easier for you to make some progress away from weasel words and toward a much more meaningful way of expressing what matters in organizations in this episode's feature article, which is called Are Your Goals Measure Worthy? You can get the written copy of the podcast's feature article in this episode's corresponding issue of the Measure Up email newsletter. The newsletter gives you additional resources to meaningfully measure what matters, and you can subscribe for free at measureupblog.com. There are indeed a few different opinions out there about what makes a goal worth measuring. So why are so many of our goals so hard to meaningfully measure? Don't try to be smart. The SMART acronym is too confusing. People don't know whether goals should be SMART or whether performance measures should be SMART. They don't know what specific really means. That's what the S stands for. They aren't sure if R stands for realistic or relevant. And if A is for achievable, then does that mean you can't have stretch goals? To write great goals, asking these four questions is all you need. Question 1. Does everyone share the same understanding of this goal? It's a mistake to try to use as few words as possible to write goal statements. That's because, for whatever reasons, we use very weaselly language and end up with motherhood statements that can't be measured. In my experience, the vast majority of goals are so vague that 7 different people can easily have 13 different interpretations of the same goal. Not good. Question 2. Can we easily recognize when the goal is happening through observation? You can't measure something that you can't observe. If you can't observe it, then you can't know when it's happening or when it isn't happening. If you have a goal like this, then it can't really be a goal. What's the point of aiming for something you can't see or recognize or discern as different in some way from how things are now? Question 3. Does this goal matter more than all the things we're not going to measure? If you're going to measure something, then it really ought to be something you should, can, and will improve. We don't have enough time to measure everything. It's distracting to measure something just because it's easy to, and it's wasteful to measure something if we really don't need to take any action on it. Only measure results, or results that might not need to be improved, but you need to urgently remedy if they do take a turn in the wrong direction. Question 4. Is the goal about making a difference in the world or just about doing stuff? Most of what we measure is action. How much stuff did we do and how much of it did we do on time? If we keep on measuring activity, our attention will stay focused on doing activity. But what we really want is to make our world, or our little part of it, better in some way. That's why we do the activity anyway. So make sure your goals are about the results of your activity, so you can monitor the degree to which you're making the difference in the world you set out to make. Now, if you want to take action on the ideas in this article, here's a suggestion. Ask these four questions of your own current strategic or operational goals. Do your goals pass muster? Remember, it's never too late to change a goal that isn't measure-worthy. Now, this issue of measure-worthy goals happens to be the topic of this episode's question, which comes from Measure Up subscriber Laura. Laura asks, how do you measure progress in the delivery of services that are not necessarily quantitative? Well, I think your services themselves don't need to be quantitative. You need to be clear about what it looks like when they're working well, and that's actually a qualitative thing. I know it sounds a little bit strange, but if you want to end up with very, very quantitative measures or meaningful measures, you don't start looking for the numbers, you actually start with the words. The qualitative part has to come before the quantitative part. How well we describe the performance results that we want to measure has a huge bearing on how meaningful our measures are and how easy it is to come up with those meaningful measures. So you need to start by describing the specific performance results that matter most about your services and describe those performance results in clear and observable language. For example, if your service is about skills development or about training people, then one possible performance result is that students successfully learn the skills. It's not the only performance result, but it's probably one of them. Now, if we want to figure out how to make that measurable, how to come up with a way of quantifying how well that's happening, a really useful little tool to use is Douglas Hubbard's clarification chain. Now, Doug Hubbard wrote the book How to Measure Anything. If you Google his name or a clarification chain, you'll pretty quickly find it. The clarification chain goes like this. If it matters at all, it is detectable or observable. If it is detectable, then it can be detected as an amount or range of possible amounts. If it can be detected as a range of possible amounts, then it can be measured. So let's have a look at how that clarification chain might apply to our fictional performance result for a skills development organization. And that result was, just as a quick reminder, students successfully learn the skills. The first part of the clarification chain is, if it matters at all, it is detectable or observable. So, for example, if students successfully learn the skills, what would you observe? Maybe it's their answers to examination questions. Maybe it's what happens when they apply their skills without assistance. The second part of the clarification chain is, if it is detectable, then it can be detected as an amount or range of possible amounts. So, for example, if we were observing answers to examination questions, then a way that we can turn that into amount might be how many students passed the examination. If we wanted to turn into an amount the observation of what happens when students apply their skills without assistance, we might end up with an amount like how many students produce the output their new skills were acquired to produce. Oh, another idea for observing students' answers to examination questions, we could gauge an amount there by looking at how many questions do students get right in the examination. Now, the third part of the clarification chain is, if it can be detected as a range of possible amounts, then it can be measured. And that's just a simple next step, really. Once you've figured out what the amount is, you're now just turning it into, I guess, a statistic of some kind. So our amount of, how many students pass the examination, we could turn that into a measure, which might be the percentage of students who pass. Our amount, that was how many questions do students get right, Well, we could turn that into a measure, like average number of questions that students get right. And the amount that was to do with how many students produced the output their new skills were acquired to produce, then we could be measuring the proportion of students that produce the output their new skills were acquired to produce. The bottom line is, if you can't quantify progress for your performance results, then it's a pretty sure sign that you haven't described the performance results in specific enough terms. You haven't yet described what exactly you would detect or observe. Well, I hope that helps Laura and anyone else who's struggling with a very similar question, and I'm sure many of you are. If you have a question that you'd like me to answer for you on this podcast, just shoot me an email at measureup@stacybarr.com. Now, the words that you choose to describe the outcomes or results of your services is very important. And that's why this episode's quick tip is about how to practice using this mysterious thing called sensory-rich language. Sensory-rich language is language or words that describe what we would see, what we would hear, what we would touch or feel, taste or smell, if we're experiencing something. A day at the fair, what would you see? You'd see children running around. You would see stalls selling candy apples or toffee apples and fairy floss or cotton candy, whatever you call it. You'd see Ferris wheels turning around. You would see probably a lot of livestock, a lot of show horses, show dogs, and show cattle. What would you hear? You'd hear a lot of laughter. You'd probably hear screams from people on a roller coaster. You might hear the hoofbeats of horses. You might hear the lowing of cattle. What would you smell? Well, let's go to the cattle first, shall we? What would you smell? I'm not going to elaborate on that, actually. I'll leave that up to your imagination. You might smell hamburgers cooking. You might smell straw or hay in the air. What would you be tasting? Well, you could taste the fairy floss or the cotton candy or the hot dog. You might be feeling really happy and content, or you might be feeling nervous or excited about going on one of the roller coaster rides. Sensory-rich language describes all the different dimensions of how we as humans with five physical senses experience the world. And it's through that language that we capture the richness of an experience and can convey it to somebody else. That's really important, particularly in business, because we're really trying to create things that are quite abstract. We're trying to create things in the future in business. That's what strategic plans are all about. We're trying to create experiences through a lot of our business processes that can be quite esoteric or, unless it's a manufacturing process, it can be quite vague and difficult to observe immediately by what we're looking at. The better we can use sensory-rich language, the better we'll be able to describe what future state we're trying to create as an organization or a business, and what kind of experience we want to create for our customers, for our employees, and for any other stakeholders. When we use that kind of language, it's much easier for people to grab hold of that and understand it and create that image or that scenario in their mind as though it were already happening. The more precise we can be with that sensory language, the more likely it is that everybody will have a very similar understanding of where we're trying to head or what we're trying to create in the future. So instead of using those weasel words that I mentioned earlier, efficient, effective, sustainable, reliable, quality, value, instead start practicing writing what your goals and what your objectives really mean in sensory words instead, sensory-rich language instead. If you're trying to make a particular process more efficient, then what would you see? What would you hear? What would you feel? What would you be able to physically touch? You know, how would it be different? And describe it in those sensory words. It also helps to pay attention, not just in business, but to how you describe things to anybody, to people in your family or in social situations, and to listen to the words that they use as well, and practice being more descriptive in the way that you communicate with people. It's a fantastic skill to have. It's an engaging way to speak. It captures people's attention. It hooks them in. It helps them respond more intelligently and more specifically to what you're saying. It helps a conversation flow into really interesting directions. Now, sure, you are going to be using up more words in the short term, but it is much better than all of the rework you have to put in when people have completely misunderstood what you've said, completely misunderstood a goal, and failed to do anything to pursue an objective or a goal because they had no idea what it really meant to them. Guess what? We're here at the end of another episode. Thanks again for joining me. Remember, you can download these podcasts. You can also read the feature articles at measureupblog.com. And you can subscribe to this podcast at iTunes. Just search for Measure Up. So until I catch you next time, this is Stacey Barr, the Performance Measure Specialist, signing off. Keep measuring what matters and engaging everyone you can to do the same.